Hello and welcome to Tasting Room Radio. I'm Terry David Mulligan. This is part two of our coverage of the 44th annual Vancouver Wine Fest. We start with Justin Hall, the winemaker at Incomeep, and Michael Coleman, his next-door neighbor, at Osoyoos La Rose. They're part of the Osoyoos package because the sponsor of that segment is Moon Cursor, right in the mix. And then Sandy Lear from Laughingstock brings beautiful wines from Viognier we go crazy for, and Ryan Resch, the winemaker and general manager at Behringer in Napa, followed by Tyler Tennyson, the winemaker at Aquilini on Red Mountain, Washington State, and David Phillips, the winemaker and general manager from Michael David Wines in Lodi, California. And we finish two Chilean wineries and winemakers, very famous, Oscar Salas, the winemaker at Santa Rita, and then we're joined by Pablo Prieto, who is the winemaker at Vina Carmen, two of the very best wineries in all of Chile, Santa Rita, Vina Carmen, finish off the show. So enjoy this. It is a race. We just open up the microphones. And by the way, that wonderful voice and clarity that you hear throughout this show and the show before and the one that's coming is DJ Kearney, the wine director at Terminal City Club, educator, writer, speaker, wine judge, top flight, the best of the best. DJ Kearney sits in on this edition of Tasting Room Radio. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Moon Cursor Wines in Osoyoos. Happy to report that the tasting room at Moon Cursor is now open, so you can book your tasting now. If you sign up for the newsletter, they'll blow the whistle on the new releases when the time comes. Just pick the wines that you want for your club shipments and get first dibs on releases and fancy rare stuff from the old small lots wines. And shipping is free for 6 bottles or more. Just a reminder that the tasting room is now open. All the details at mooncursor.com. Next up, Justin Hall, the winemaker at Incomeep in Osoyoos, and Michael Coleman, the winemaker and general manager at Osoyoos La Rose, next door neighbors to each other. Hello, gents. I've just introduced you. You are within spitting distance of one another.
We are now, because our new winery is actually being built a stone's throw from Incomeep. So, yeah. Didn't you know that?
I know where I'm going to be stopping in from now on. If you want to taste some good wines, come by our area.
I think we'll have the Osoyoos, you know, tied up with our two wineries down there, side by side.
And sometimes neighbors never get a chance to talk. This is nice that we can do this together. And I thought I'd put the two of you guys together. This is good. Mr. Coleman, we did a Zoom.
We did.
This is the first time that we've met. What did you bring to pour today?
I actually brought the 2019 Le Grand Vin, which is our flagship Bordeaux blend. And it's actually our new release, so it's going to be hitting the BC market within the month of May. I decided to bring it for two reasons, that it's our new release, and second of all, it's my first vintage with Osoyoos La Rose. So in 2019, I was the vineyard manager and the viticulturalist for Osoyoos La Rose, and I was involved from A to Z with this wine. And I think, you know, with 2019, I think it's also a wonderful growing season. It's very long. It didn't have any big heat spikes. Didn't have any big temperature swings. And I think it really, really showcases the amazing potential the Okanagan Valley has.
How was the handoff from winemaker to winemaker?
It was great. I had a very good working relationship with a previous winemaker. You know, what was great is that when she handed over the project to me, I had a very good relationship with the owners in France, and we shared the same vision for Osoyoos La Rose.
But the continuity was everything.
The continuity was everything, and I think that's what Osoyoos La Rose is about, is the continuity of the wine and Le Grand Vin. You know, we've got the same vineyard from year to year, but also at the same time, I wanted to make my mark on Osoyoos La Rose. You know, the winery now is certified organic. So 2022 is our first organic vintage. And with 19, 20, and 22, you start to see a bit of a shift in style. And that's something that I kind of wanted to touch upon is you know, yesterday we had a sort of a seminar on terroir in BC and how climate change was affecting that. And I think the most important part of terroir is the person, is the winemaker, is the viticulturalist, and how we interpret the vines and the vineyards to a changing climate, I think, is the most important part of terroir. And I'm sure Justin probably agrees with me that...
I couldn't have said it any better. And, you know, I've been a long-time advocate of Osoyoos La Rose, and I know the wine in depth from 2004. I still have a Magnum from 2004 in my basement. I've never found the time to open, sadly. I enjoy this fresh style of winemaking. I think the tannins are soft enough. There's enough seriousness to the wine that it's going to age. Very, very beautiful wine. Good job.
Yeah, well, thank you very much. I mean, I think what's really important, and the wines we try to make at Asturias Rose, is that we try to make a wine that's approachable when young, but at the same time has the potential to cellar. So quite often we will keep the wines back a couple of years before releasing them, but then they do have a tendency to show very well for a couple of years and then shut down and then open up again. So we're pouring the 2012 and the 2011, which I think have just come out of their shell and are showing really well.
I think he just described Inkameep's wine style.
I'll stop talking
the new
now.
Guys come around, stepping on the territory here.
Justin Hall, the winemaker at Inkameep in Osoyoos, and Michael Kloman, the winemaker and general manager at Osoyoos La Rose.
I want to ask, I asked the same question that I asked Mr. Kloman, and that is the handoff. When you took the flame for Inkameep, that's a big freaking deal.
I wasn't eager. It took me, like I said, I've been in business for 20 years now. And I took my time. I had passion. I started back in 2003, early 2004. I went to school. I studied. I worked my butt off in the wine industry. I drug hoses for the first, 15, 16 years of winemaking. Moved into assistant winemaker and then into white winemaker. And then when I was handed off, the progression was very smooth. The transition was easy. I had already done it. I had already been there. And so that was my mentor. Randy was, he's still my main man. Yeah.
And so all of that prepped you for that moment when you realized that this was your wine that you were making, your name was going to be on it, and reviews. You can't do much about that. That's the way it is. So how did you deal with that?
Well, like I said, in 2016, I became the white winemaker. 2017, I won my first platinum at Wine Line. At the peaks is Inkameep Cellars, White Marine, Justin Hall. I was like, oh yeah. And that was like the last
job
big award
security.
I won.
Job security.
It doesn't get to me, honestly. I think it's the transition has been easy. But I've prepped for it. It's not like I'm just stepping in and going, what do I do? I've been there.
What did you bring to pour tonight?
I brought the 2019 Red Marine. So very, very, I wouldn't say similar in style to the Le Grand Vin. It's a little bit different. Inkameep Cellars, we typically have a little bit more alcohol, a little bit more sweetness and body and roundness. I like the fruit. I was discussing with DJ. I like the fruit to drive the wine. I want the oak there. I like oak, but I like it for the sweetness and the tannins. I'm not a big fan of oak when it stands out of... Well, I explained it to somebody earlier today was, listen, yes, oak is fantastic. I pay $1,500 a barrel. I pay like $5,000 for the fruit. Why would you hide the fruit behind your oak? The oak's only $1,500. That's not the expensive part. So I think showing the fruit is much more, enjoyable. But there is some oak here to support the wine.
Peach.
So I've just been reflecting on the fact we've got two such special wineries. When Osoyoos La Rose was announced, it was like a shot heard around the wine world. What? Where? Who? The Okanagan Valley? The Group Taillon? It was astonishing. I was in the vineyards in 2001 with a massive rattlesnake right in front of me. First one I'd ever seen in the Okanagan. And I also have some magnums, a couple that survived the fire when my house burned down that I'm saving. But one of the most elegant wines we have. Just the architecture is beautiful. There's so much freshness and it's so well priced. Thank you for giving us such a deal for such a fabulous wine. There are some greedy producers in BC and this is just a joy to drink. And then here we have Inkameep and North America's first Aboriginal winemaker. How special is that? Right? You.
I try.
Yeah, you have. And I've been tasting your wines with Randy. And then as you started to assert yourself for a couple of decades now. And that's very, very special and groundbreaking for us also.
Well, Dan, both of you should get a raise.
I've tried.
What are you pouring at the La Rose table? How many wines did you bring?
I bought about five different wines. So I brought the 2019, which is our new release, Pital 19, which is our sort of our other have a wine that we use to showcase the Osuras Rose vineyard. It's a different expression of the vineyard. And then we have the 2017 and the 2012. And I chose the 2017 and the 2012 because they're two different expressions of the same vineyard. 2017 is a very, very hot vintage in the Okanagan. And I think it's a wine that shows very, very, very well now. And it's got lots of body to it, quite alcohol, quite fruit forward. Whereas the 2012, I think, is a more, say, different style of Osuras Rose, which I really love, and I think it's really got the legs on it to go the distance, and I think it's showing great now. And so I like to show them side by side.
And what did you bring from portfolio?
Incomeep, all current vintages, Chardonnay, Cabernet, which is the Quemquemt. Everybody still has a hard time pronouncing Q2 or QQ. Red Marine, which we've tried, and the Talon, which was the, it's always kind of been of a fan favorite. A little softer, a little riper, jammier, easy drinking, but very serious at the same time.
Any surprises coming? Come on!
We had one new wine we're maybe coming out with. We want it to be a big bang, so it's not solidified yet.
I'm going to cut. If you do it next week, I'll...
we're trying really hard.
You're teasing us here. I mean, we need more information.
Sandy tried it. I think she liked it. I don't know.
Okay.
One last question, Michael. Who's your football team?
Unfortunately, Chelsea, which is not going well at the moment.
Arsenal.
Well, you're not doing great at the moment either.
It's been a pleasure, Terry. Thank you very much.
Thank you, both of you.
And when Sandy comes in, feature her strong at Laughingstock.
All right.
Great. Thanks for having us.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Terry.
This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Mooncursor Wines in Osoyoos. Happy to report that the tasting room at Mooncursor is now open, so you can book your tasting now. If you sign up for the newsletter, they'll blow the whistle on the new releases when the time comes. Just pick the wines that you want for your club shipments and get first dibs on releases and fancy rare stuff from the old small lots wines. And shipping is free for 6 bottles or more. Just a reminder that the tasting room is now open. All the details at mooncursor.com. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Unsworth Vineyards in the Cowichan Valley. There's a new chef at the Unsworth Bistro. He's Dan Bain. Come and meet the chef and his culinary talents. And at the same time, you might want to shop for some bubble. Charme de Lille and Charme de Lille Rosé is available in the tasting room. And if you're gifting over the next little while, consider picking up an Unsworth gift card that can be used at the restaurant, the tasting room, and the wine shop. They're convenient, and best of all, they're reloadable. You can find all the details at unsworthvineyards.com.
Sandy Lur, Laughingstock, Naramata, the winemaker. What did you bring from Laughingstock to pour today at the table?
So today we've got our 2021 Chardonnay. It's a recent release. And then we've got also our 2021 Viognier and our 2020 Syrah and our 2021 Portfolio.
Well done.
Yes, thank you.
Emptied the cupboard. Did you have the bottle? What do you got there?
This is our Viognier that I brought over to taste.
Terry will be happy with that.
It's a little palate cleanser after all those big reds.
Oh, please. I would start and end with Viognier if I could do it.
You can have a little taste.
Is today Viognier day?
Awesome. This one is, so the fruit comes from the South Okanagan down in Osoyoos. We've got our Perfect Hedge vineyard right down by the border, plus our Bear Cub vineyard, which is close by as well in Osoyoos. So very nice, hot, dry climate for the Viognier. Gets really nice, intense aromatics down there. And we use a little bit of it to co-ferment in with the Syrah, which makes it very, very nice. But this, I love it on its own. We ferment about half of it in French oak barrels and the other half in the concrete eggs so that it's a little bit more of a pure expression, but with the texture as well.
How much do you make? How many cases?
How many cases? We did about 600 cases this year. 700 cases.
Probably. Just tells me how hard I have to chase, that's all.
It's magnificent. It just is such an amazing expression of Viognier with apricots and white flowers and mandarin, and it's structured. It makes you think of Condrieu more than anything else. It's so well done.
so well farmed.
More, we just need more.
So well farmed.
Yes, we're very lucky. We've got an amazing viticulture team over there, and the vineyards themselves are just incredible spots. The fruit there is some of the best I've worked with, so pretty lucky to have that.
Do you lean Viognier? Do you not have to be convinced to grow this and make it?
For myself?
I love Viognier.
I love Viognier.
I'm crazy for Viognier.
I love it. It's one of my favorite whites. I think it's something that you can play with the textural component of this wine, and you know, you can have this sort of oily sort of viscosity on it, but still the bright, fresh acidity, which helps to really lift the aromatics and keep it really fresh and approachable.
Congratulations, it's so good.
So this, in 2022, we also did a little bit of Viognier in the amphora to do as a standalone, just to see we can showcase it in different ways. So with oak, without oak.
And did it work?
Yes, it was very interesting. So we did a wild fermentation in the amphora, and it was a very slow fermentation. The aromatics are even more pronounced, and it's got a bit of the texture, not as much as we get in the barrel, but it's kind of a fun way to sort of showcase what different fermentation vessels can do for a variety. And
Sandy Lur, Laughingstock, Naramata, the winemaker.
It's remarkable, isn't it? I remember tasting the very first iteration of this. And, you know, it suppresses the aromatics a little bit, but, you know, all of that currency is spent on the palate.
Yes.
Where it's savory and phenolic and dry and botanical.
And memorable.
Memorable is a completely different beast from the barrel concrete.
Yes.
This may be the only time I'm going to ask this question of any of these winemakers. What's the price point on the Viognier?
This one is, I believe it's $29.
Thank you. Thank you. Wow. Thank you.
It's a bargain.
Is it in the store here? Because if it is, oh, never mind.
I think it's in the store. I brought the sales guys with me, so.
Do you have any surprises for us? Anything that you're planning that we don't already know about?
I think so. I can't remember if I told you about it back in November when I talked to you, but we did another Amphora white, which is a Chenin Blanc. And that's a brand new to the portfolio. We thought we'd experiment a little bit with the Amphora. And we did a wild ferment Chenin Blanc, which I absolutely love it. So we're going to do a little bit more of that this coming vintage, because we only did about 40 cases worth. So it right now, we're only sending it off to wine club members. It's not available in the retail.
So now that is my favorite white grape. When it's well made, and then it's just profound.
Yes.
So well done. I do have some nice old Chenin access to something mature.
Yeah, it's fairly mature. I think the vines are just over 20 years. Yeah. So
okay. That's good.
I mean,
it does make a difference for Chenin.
And the other brand new one that we did this year is the Blind Trust White blend, which is a Bordeaux white, and it's going to be a Sauv Blanc Semillon coming out in June. End of June it'll be released, so excited for that one as well.
That's a whole nother interview. It's right there. It's fantastic.
Yes.
Have yourself a great year.
Thank you so much. Great
Truly.
To see you.
People
and
are
I
coming
heard...
back in droves. Thank you both. Thank you.
I heard about your new project. I can't wait to hear about that.
I know, well.
Yeah.
Sandy Lur, Laughingstock, Naramata, the winemaker. DJ Kearney, who has become my co-host, is having a conversation with several masters of wine. She's in hog heaven. Ryan Rich from Behringer Vineyards is here. He is the winemaker. He's the general manager. I'm going to ask you the same question I was going to ask you last night. What did you bring to pour?
Oh, so I brought our Knights Valley Cabernet, and I brought our Private Reserve Chardonnay.
Nicely done.
Yeah.
And over at the table, what are they pouring?
Same two wines, but then we also have Q, which is one of our red blends, and then our Napa Valley Chardonnay as well. So all four wines.
We like you here, don't we?
I hope so. I mean, so far last night, the feedback was really good. So.
I mean, but Canada in general, they like your wine.
Yeah, absolutely. We've had a good week so far.
What's our favorite from the portfolio?
You know, the Knights Valley Cab's always a winner with folks. You know, for me, it's the place, it's the wine, but also I think people really resonate with that price point, too.
There's been floods.
Yeah.
There's been fire.
Yeah.
There's been heat.
Yes.
Which is the most damning?
Oh, the heat every single time. You know, one thing people don't always realize is the heat's just like cold. The vines shut down when it gets too hot.
Do they recover?
Absolutely. We didn't see the recover as well last harvest, but absolutely they do recover. You know, a lot of these vines have, they're exposed to it most of the year, but last year was kind of an extreme one for us.
How about the flooding?
We haven't had as much flooding where my vineyards are. You know, most of the vineyards that I work with are up in the mountains, so we actually avoid a lot of the flooding.
Hi, Deej. What are you tasting?
Fantastic. Nice to meet you, Ryan. I'm DJ. I've tasted with Lori and visited many, many times.
The wonderful Lori Hook.
Yes, the one and only. And Ed, of course. This is one mouthful of sexy Chardonnay. Touches all the brain's pleasure points. Yeah, very nicely done. So bright.
This is not a summer sipper. I immediately think of food to pair with this one.
Absolutely. It's also a Chardonnay you want to sit and think about. So, you know, for me, it's one of those that's really complex. I always equate it to the, a red wine of white wine because it is that complex. You want to sit and think about it.
Texture.
The textures.
In a white wine.
Yeah, the texture's really layered.
And food worthiness.
I'm not spitting that. Screw that.
Yeah.
That's wonderful.
I'll take that as a really big compliment.
What's the price point on that bottle?
I believe in Canada it's like 65 or 70, but in the U.S. it's about 50.
Okay, hold on. DJ's pouring.
One of the first seminars I ever did here at the wine festival, 2003 or 4, maybe 2, this, Knights Valley, Behringer, such a great wine.
How much of it do you make?
So we make basically our entire vineyard. Our vineyard's about 300 acres, so we make it roughly about 80,000 cases each year.
Are you tapped out, or is there room for progression?
Oh, Knights Valley's, at least as far as our property goes, we plant as much as we can. And Knights Valley is an AVA. There isn't really much room to grow there. So.
Does it have to, you know, we talk about this all the time, about terroir and how each season is different.
Yeah.
What do we expect from that Knights Valley? What kind of consistency do you have to produce, or do you go, of course, with what the earth gives you?
So definitely, you know, for me, the style of wines I make, the caliber of wines I make, it's definitely a very seasonal wine. So you'll see some variation from season to season, and I think this caliber of wine you should. As far as our Knights Valley goes and the consistency, you know, where it sits, it's a little pocket in Sonoma County, completely cut off from the coast, super rocky soils, pretty hot already as it is. So we already get the consistency because of that climate. Yeah.
It's beautiful, and it has such an identity. There's something gorgeously botanical about it, in addition to it being one of the most floral expressions of Cabernet and the heat. But it's very opulent and generous, but it's contained. It has such a beautiful identity, and I think some Behringer style.
That's a great word, contained. It is. It's all there.
I know.
In the mouth. You like the room? You like being here?
I do. I've been walking around a little bit, getting to do a little bit of tasting ahead of time. You know, there's some South American wines I haven't tried, so I'm always excited to try regions I don't always get.
Have you tried a region called BC?
Not yet. I'm headed there next. I started on that side and been working my way this way.
What do you want to taste from BC?
There was a winery when I first started my career that was a sister winery, and I'm going to butcher the pronunciation, so I apologize for that. But Los Osos, it's on the very end.
Osos La Rose?
Yes.
From Gord La Rose in Bordeaux. Yeah. They make fabulous wines, and they've got some old vintages, so you can taste 12 and 16 and 18.
They're doing wine library sales, actually.
Yeah, they are. No, they're still one of our stunners. So your memory is good. We have a Behringer working in the province. Did you know that?
I did.
Mark Behringer.
At Phantom Creek.
Yeah,
absolutely.
It's insidious.
Yeah.
It just goes from generation to generation.
Yeah.
Congratulations and thank you for stepping in.
Yeah, no, thank you so much. Thank you for the time. Really appreciate
it. Have a good year.
You too.
Ryan Resch, the general manager and winemaker at Behringer Napa.
This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Unsworth Vineyards in the Cowichan Valley. There's a new chef at the Unsworth Bistro. He's Dan Bain. Come and meet the chef and his culinary talents. And at the same time, you might want to shop for some bubble. Charme de Lille and Charme de Lille Rosé is available in the tasting room. And if you're gifting over the next little while, consider picking up an Unsworth gift card that can be used at the restaurant, the tasting room, and the wine shop. They're convenient, and best of all, they're reloadable. You can find all the details at unsworthvineyards.com.
This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Hillside Winery on the Naramata Bench. They have something very interesting going on at Hillside, a tasting room experience. Each 45-minute seated tasting guides you through the history of Hillside, one of the originals, from the last ice age, which determined the geology of the terroir, through the influence of their founder on the development of the BC wine region, to the 100% Naramata-grown, award-winning wines that they pour that very day. You can find all the details at hillsidewinery.ca.
We are being joined here at the 44th Annual Vancouver International Wine Festival by Tyler Tennyson, consulting winemaker at Aquilini, Red Mountain, Washington State, and Dave Phillips, co-owner and president of Michael David Winery in Lodi. You gentlemen have been introduced already.
I'm Tyler.
Tyler.
Tennyson,
Dave.
Yeah, with Aquilini.
With who?
Aquilini.
Aquilini, yeah.
Red Mountain.
Red Mountain, Washington.
Oh, love it, yeah.
Lodi.
Lodi, absolutely, yeah. Yeah, we know Michael David, yeah.
Well, I love Syrah, and your Syrah in your area is amazing.
It's so any other Syrah in the world.
Yeah. That's what
BC, you and I could talk about...
I know, and so Okanagan is ours. Syrah, ours is a total distinct outlier also.
Let's start, gentlemen, just by talking about what wines you brought to pour. What'd you bring to pour from Aquilini?
We brought the A56 Red Blend from the 2019 vintage. It's a Merlot-based red blend, 40% Merlot, 36% Cabernet Sauvignon, 23% Cabernet Franc, and the balance is Petit Verdot.
You're one of three consulting winemakers?
Yeah, so I'm the resident winemaker. I'm kind of the boots on the ground, and I work directly with Atelier Melka, which is Philippe Melka and Mayan Kaczynski. And we work together to create the elite program for Aquilini, which includes the A56 label wine as well.
Here's the big question. I mean, it's a larger question than we have time for. However,
sure,
the wine, the vineyards, the acreage that they bought.
Yeah.
Everybody was talking about the promise of this acreage. Is it showing that promise?
Absolutely. So, you know, we still have to source some old vines for the high-end Eroe and Aquilini, but every year more and more of the estate fruit is making its way into the blends. And so it's really great to see kind of as they come online, they kind of make a bigger, more impactful role in those wines.
Can I ask one more question?
Yes.
Thank you. Dave, Lodi. First of all, I love the place. I love the region. And we were talking about Paso and how long it took them to get people's attention.
Yeah.
Does Lodi have our attention now?
Yeah. Now, I mean, it's taken us about 25 years, you know. 25 years ago, we didn't have a tourism commission or anything. Now we're flooded with tourists every week. So we've made some great strides, and we've grown from 5 local wineries back in the late 90s to over 85 wineries now. And I'm pretty proud of that. You know, we encourage a lot of our friends and neighbors to start their own wineries and really create Lodi as a destination for tourism and wine, as well as experimentation. We grow over 130 different varieties of grapes in Lodi.
I know this, it's tough to talk about regional distinctions. What about Lodi in terms of its terroir?
Lodi gives you fruit. I mean, this big, bright fruit. Yes, we tend to have a little bit higher alcohol because that's what Mother Nature gives us. You know, we like to pick the grapes when they taste their best. So, yeah, almost all of our wines are over 14% on the red side. But you know, we're not going to apologize for it. That's what we get, and we like it. And the wines are balanced.
Yeah,
we can go to 15.5, and still balance the wines. They're not going to be hot because, you know, that's what we get.
What did you bring to pour today?
I'm featuring our Petit, which is a blend of Petit Syrah and Petit Verdot. I mean, Lodi has the most old vine Zin in the world. We also have the most old vine Petit Syrah in the world in Lodi. So. Beautiful old gnarly vines that our great-grandparents planted during Prohibition and still farming them.
We are being joined here at the 44th Annual Vancouver International Wine Festival by Tyler Tennyson, consulting winemaker at Aquilini, Red Mountain, Washington State, and Dave Phillips, co-owner and president of Michael David Winery in Lodi. Deej? Yeah.
It's such an extraordinary area. Lodi can do it all, the MacGyver of wine regions. And I was stunned to learn that there are 130 grapes in Lodi. You know, it's not big, and it has an extraordinary conjunction of, you know, coastal winds and cool air and fog and heat. So it's just a magical region, and the fine wine that comes out of Lodi is just shocking. It's so good, from Albarino to Zinfandel, from 12.5% alcohol to 16%, all balanced, all expressive. It's just, yeah, it's the most exciting wine region in California now.
And is there a follow-up? Is there any leaning to field blends?
Oh, a lot of field blends existed naturally because that's what our great-grandparents planted.
But you know, do they get named field blends, or do they leave that off?
There's not that many vineyard-designated field blends that I can think of, you know, but, you know, we're usually putting varietal on them, but they tend to always have some Carignan, some old Grenache in there, whatever, what's in the field, you know?
And that's the secret sauce, right? Those tiny little percentages make it all so good.
Yeah.
I just want to compliment you, Tyler, on this gorgeous Washington or Red Mountain wine. Potency and freshness.
Yeah, that's something that Red Mountain does really well. It, you know, it has this unique quality of sort of presenting these two qualities that seem like that they kind of juxtapose each other with, you know, this extreme power and ripeness, but then can, it, you know, on the other side, you see this sort of real rustic tannin, this sort of refined and balanced through, you know, a real high quality acidity that you don't always see. It creates a tension that is unique to that space, you know.
It's very recognizable to BC wine drinkers because we have that conjunction of high ripeness and high natural acidity. So do the hockey players drink this wine?
I'd like to think so. Yeah, I mean, I'm still waiting for video evidence, but maybe too much this year. I don't know, you know. Maybe more would have pushed them a little farther into the, okay.
Is there anything being poured to the Kraken's game?
I do not believe that is the case, but, you know, I'd like to see that change for sure.
And Lodi doesn't have a hockey team, does it?
We did. The Calgary Flames had their
B-League team in
Stockton, just south of us. But unfortunately, they left after last year, unfortunately.
Right.
Moved back to Canada. So
DJ says that California should be the next theme area.
We've done it a couple times in the last 15 years, I think. So,
yeah,
but at some point we'll be... my goal is to get more Lodi wineries here so we can have Lodi as a theme one year.
Exactly.
So.
That would be fantastic.
You know, to me, the reason why we want to look at California again is this idea of looking at your wines from three dimensions, right? The topography, geology, underwater, all of these forces that explain style and quality in such a unique way. Very few wine regions in the world have this 3D vision of their terroir, and that's exciting and singular.
Thank God we got a lot of water this year, so we'll be able to keep growing grapes. We're not have to worry about them all drying up now for at least a couple more years.
You got to make it last.
We are doing everything we can. We're putting the water back in the ground, and the snowpack is still up there right now. We're just waiting for it to melt. So,
what about Red Mountain? What's going there?
Yes, I mean, water-wise, we're really lucky to be in Washington State, and you know, we have both aquifer-fed as well as river rights as well, and so we're really lucky in the Northwest being kind of shadowed by two sets of mountains. We have plenty of rain, and so we're really lucky in that regard. We haven't had to face that battle yet. I mean, it's always a concern, and you're always trying to find new ways to farm because you know it's coming. You know, you gotta start, you know, you learn from other regions, and you see that, like, one day this will be our problem as well, too. So you try to learn your lessons now and find ways to reduce water usage.
Congratulations on both of your wines and your wineries.
Thank you.
Thank you. Be safe.
You. Oh, thank you.
Have a good time out there. Thank you.
We will. Thanks. Yeah.
Well done, TDM.
Thanks, Deej. We are being joined here at the 44th Annual Vancouver International Wine Festival by Tyler Tennyson, consulting winemaker at Aquilini, Red Mountain, Washington State, and Dave Phillips, co-owner and president of Michael David Winery in Lodi.
This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Hillside Winery on the Naramata Bench. They have something very interesting going on at Hillside, a tasting room experience. Each 45-minute seated tasting guides you through the history of Hillside, one of the originals, from the last ice age, which determined the geology of the terroir, through the influence of their founder on the development of the BC wine region, to the 100% Naramata-grown, award-winning wines that they pour that very day. You can find all the details at hillsidewinery.ca.
This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Mount Boucherie Estate Wines. Very much a part of the portfolio at Mount Boucherie is Modest Wines. The original idea for these wines was to have a house red and a white for their restaurant, The Modest Butcher. These wines became incredibly popular and a whole new series took off. The mantra at Modest Butcher and Mount Boucherie Estate is to celebrate wine, food, and laughter with an unpretentious yet professional vibe. All the details can be found at mountboucherie.com. I'm Terry David Mulligan. This is Tasting Room Radio. This is crazy. Every year I say to myself, why do I put myself through this? And then we get to these moments that are beautiful. Chile is one of the featured regions, of course, because South America is the featured region. Oscar Salas is with me from Santa Rita. He's the winemaker. We may be joined by Pablo Prieto from Vina Carmen, also the winemaker. But I'm glad that you're here. You're representing your entire nation.
Yes, lovely to be here. How you doing, Terry?
Very well. Tell me, if you will, the state of South American winemaking and wines in general. Is it on an upswing? Does it feel good that they're on a roll, that they've got their groove on?
We are not an old wine country.
Yeah.
But I think we found the last 20 or years, you know, more consolidation of what we have in terms of having, you know, the right varieties on the right places, and especially after we realized that instead of being a continental country influenced by the continent, we are a Pacific country, so much more influenced by the Humboldt current. So instead of looking at latitude, you know, where to plant a certain varietal, or looking at Bordeaux and its latitude, you know, and decide what to plant in Chile, what the aristocrats in the past did, now we just look at the distance from the ocean, and you can have a real strong factor of the potential that you will get, you know, in the different varietals. So that consolidation has been really strong, and we are now doing really well, you know, what we do.
Does Santa Rita make wines for Chile or for the world?
Santa Rita is like about 60% exports,
yeah,
and 40% local market. And Santa Rita, you know, even though we're a new world wine, Santa Rita has been there since 1640 making wines. Of course, at that time, the wines were for the churches. We have a church in the winery. And then in 1850, you know, we founded and we planted the whole property. So it's, Santa Rita has been there for quite a long time.
And Chile drinks Chile. Drinks local.
We drink a lot of local. And the best example is the Carmenere.
Yeah.
You know, we found the Carmenere in 1994.
Yeah.
And we thought it was going to...
Merlot.
Right, it was Merlot. But we thought it was going to boost in the world. It didn't. Cabernet Sauvignon kept being, you know, the flagship of the varietals. But in the local market, Carmenere, it is really strong. And it's been growing, and people drink it a lot. So Carmenere is very strong in there.
What version of the Carmenere? Is it peppery? Is it...
It used to be peppery when we were planting it as Merlot, when we were planting it in deep soils. Yeah. But then we realized that Carmenere had to be in shallow soils, on the granitic soils, on the central valley, not in the coast. And so after that, we started ripening the Carmenere rightly. So instead of getting greenness that it had in the past, now they are very ripe with blackberries, and especially very soft in the palate. You know, we always say that, I usually say that Carmenere is like Louis 15, because Louis 15 had a lot of, how can I say it, like finesse in their ways.
Yes.
But at the same time, he could be killing 1,000 people, you know, there. So the character of Louis 15 is similar to the Carmenere. A lot of character in the mouth palate, but when you taste the wine, it's only velvet and softness.
Oscar Salas is with me from Santa Rita. He's the winemaker. Pablo Prieto from Vina Carmen, also the winemaker.
I'm Terry.
No. You're always together. Do you know each other?
Yeah, a little bit.
Pablo Prieto has joined us from Vina Carmen. What did you bring to pour?
Oh, I brought a couple of wines. One is the one is Cabernet Sauvignon, 93% from Maipo Andes. It's on the foothills of the Andes.
Yeah.
On an alluvial soil, so it's very deep with mid palate and persistence, a traditional winemaking. And then the second wine is a red blend. It's called Triple C because of the varietals that it has, Cabernet Sauvignon, Cabernet Franc, and Carmenere.
Nice. Now, let me ask you, if I could, Pablo, about Chile's place in the world of wine these days. We were just running this back and forth. A number of people talked about it today because they're tasting your wines.
Yeah.
Does it like its place in the world of wine? Does it like its image for the rest of the world? You can make wines for Chile.
Yeah.
But for the rest of the world, what do they see you as an upstart? Do they see you as a newcomer? Or do they realize the history of Chile?
Well, yeah, that's a great question. I mean, Chile has been doing wine since lots of time.
1560.
Yeah. And we have like been known a little bit. Sometimes like we are not like recognized, I would think that as we should, because Chile is a great place to grow many varieties. In Alto Maipo, you can find not only us, just great Cabernet Sauvignons coming from there. Like it's a great place to make it. It's a great terroir, has the alluvial soil, has the colluvial, so it will have different style of Cabernet.
So a question for both of you: what do we want from Chilean wines? What is it that we want specifically, whether a white or a red? What do we want from Chilean wines? Is it a freshness? Is it a clean? Do they want an oak program? What do they want from Chilean wines?
Yeah, I was expecting that for the winemaking style of, I will speak for Carmen, we want to show the freshness, but not losing the elegance of the wines that we make. Because sometimes you can misunderstand with having freshness, you'll lose the elegance maybe. Yeah. But that's a thing that we are playing with it and trying to keep and doing balanced wine, but not losing elegance. So I think that's the great thing that we're doing in Chile.
Oscar,
I would say it's like, to put it in different words, I would say it's like a marriage between the new and the old world. So we get, you know, that exuberance and fruitiness of the wines, along with the acidity and the elegance and age of the old world wines. So they're very, very balanced, you know, Chilean wines. And also Cabernet Sauvignon. Cabernet Sauvignon is, even though, you know, you find it everywhere in the world, our Cabernet Sauvignon is amazing, and especially from Maipo, which is by far one of the best valleys in Chile and the world. Maipo Andes.
In the world.
Yes,
yeah,
well.
Yeah, for sure. It's an appellation that you can't, you have to understand that Maipo, it can compete with every other winemakers that make Cabernet Sauvignon in the world.
Can you dry farm in Maipo?
Dry farm?
No.
It's very difficult.
You know, in Chile we have been 13 years with drought, and it's hard.
Yeah, there's some places that you can, but actually it has to be really old, maybe vineyards that the roots are like way down in the soil, that they provide the wine and the vines the balance by themselves.
Pablo, what did you bring from Carmen to pour?
So I brought two wines. Both are in the Gran Reserva line, and both are really special because one is Carmenere. I heard you talking with Oscar that that lost and rediscover variety, but actually it's the history of Carmen, because we were the one who rediscovered and the first one to launch a wine with Carmenere in the label. So it was actually called Gran Viduri back then, but now it's Carmenere. So this is an historical wine, the Gran Reserva Carmenere. And also I'm bringing Gran Reserva Carne Sauvignon, which is our specialty, as we were talking. Alto Maipo is a beautiful place to grow it. And we've been doing micro-vinification all around the blocks, from each block to different rows, to understand Alto Maipo and Alto Jahuel as we know it, so we can develop wines beautifully as we are delivering it and playing with the winemaking style, doing it fresh, but balance and elegance, as I said before.
Do you like coming to events? I mean, I know that you're asked to do a lot of events. Do you like the room? Do you like the buzzing? Do you like Vancouver?
Yeah, I loved it. Very nice people, and especially the first day, I had a really nice impression because I went for a walk. I went to the Lookout Tower, then I walked to the Stanley Park, and I saw people really like relaxed. Nobody was stressed. Of course, I went through the shore, you know, but the blooming, the spring, I loved it.
Yeah.
Really loved it.
Yeah, for me the same. I'm like amazed with the city and people, and everything is just shocking. It's the first time for me being in Vancouver and in Canada, and like really blew me away. It's an amazing place.
Are you going to taste any other wines?
Yes, of course. We never miss that.
Yeah.
Well, go taste some BC wines. You can taste everybody else wherever you go. Taste some BC wines before you go. Thank you both.
Yeah.
Thank you both.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Have a good year.
You too.
Good.
Thanks a lot.
Oscar Salas from Santa Rita is the winemaker. Pablo Prieto from Vina Carmen, also the winemaker. Chile is one of the featured regions, of course, because South America is the featured region.
This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Mount Boucherie Estate Wines. Very much a part of the portfolio at Mount Boucherie is Modest Wines. The original idea for these wines was to have a house red and a white for their restaurant, The Modest Butcher. These wines became incredibly popular and a whole new series took off. The mantra at Modest Butcher and Mount Boucherie Estate is to celebrate wine, food, and laughter with an unpretentious yet professional vibe. All the details can be found at mountboucherie.com.